Welcome to the Eric Lang Show. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Frau Wines and I don't even know. What is it? A feeder zane? Anyway, I'm in a hotel room here in Jackson, Wyoming. Actually, no, I'm not in Jackson. I'm in Grand Teton National Park. So this is the podcast for Thursday. What's the date? The date is Thursday, July 26th. I owe you guys an apology. I'm sorry. I fucked up. I didn't get the podcast to you on Monday morning, the 23rd. So Jeff, in his infinite wisdom, suggested we redo the Michelle Wee one. Again, I'm sorry about that. My flight got incredibly delayed, and it's actually a really interesting story. So we had a great trip, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to do a check-in here, and then I'll play. I recorded a podcast with Stu Bone while we were in California doing a golf trip, and then I also recorded a little bit with Christian Hafer while we were in Colorado doing a golf trip. But anyway, the reason why we didn't get a podcast to you on Monday morning is Sunday we leave Ballyneal. It's a 3-hour drive to the airport. I'm at the airport 3.5 hours early, which, take it or leave it. It was what it was. And I accidentally put my laptop in my checked luggage. And I watched it go down the belt right after the check-in, you know, and I was like, that's weird. I feel like I need something in that bag. Lo and behold, it's the only way that I could deliver the podcast to Jeff to put online. And so as soon as it ducked under the meat curtains, as it were, I said to the guy, I need my bag. And he goes, you serious? And I mean, I had 3 hours, so I wasn't too stressed. And he's like, all right, well, why do you need it? And I was like, well, my laptop's in there. And he's like, you're not allowed to put a laptop in your checked luggage anyway. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. I've been checking it for a while now because I just don't care anymore. I don't care if anyone steals a laptop, you know? Go ahead. But he's like, no, it has a lithium battery. And I was like, oh, shit, that's not the only thing with lithium batteries. So I was like, that makes two reasons why I need the bag. He's like, all right, it'll be a couple minutes. Go down to the baggage carousel 15. That's where reclaim is. I mean, this is a whole, like, I've never even seen this world, you know, of being so stupid that you need to get your bag 5 minutes after you check it. So I go downstairs and I said, wait for a few minutes. And then I go up to the baggage services and I say, hey, I'm the idiot that needs the reclaim. And they're like, oh yeah, when did you make the request? I was like, 15 minutes ago. They're like, oh yeah, it'll be like an hour and 20. And I was like, I'm not sitting here staring at this baggage carousel for an hour and 20 minutes. And my thought was, okay, fine. You know what I'll do is we land at 8:30 Wyoming time. That's 7:30 LA time. I'll just get to the hotel super quick and plug in the SD card and mail Jeff the footage. Hopefully the internet connection will be okay. I can down-res it if I need to. I made all these sorts of plans. And then I get on the plane, and as always happens on a plane, I fall straight to sleep, and I wake up an hour and a half later, and I'm in the front row. So I'm an hour and a half later, the door to the aircraft is still open. And I'm like, did we land? I'm like, no, we haven't taken off yet. And so the flight was like 2.5 hours delayed. So I didn't get in. Anyway, I got in super late. And then it's an hour drive from the airport to where my family's staying. I'm here for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary with my brother and his wife and two children and my sister and her husband and his and their three children. So it's just been a family time. I haven't really been, I have no service. The Wi-Fi is like, I could probably get stuff to LA faster on a pony, depending on the size, of course. You know, a terabyte, probably faster on a pony, but you know. So anyway, that's why you heard a repeat. And I will say, I was pretty pissed off and disappointed that I came into the hotel room and fell straight to sleep and totally was out of it. But at the same time, it was the first time that we've ever done that. And we strive to do 2 episodes a week. And I guess my question to you is, do you like 2 episodes a week? I don't know. I mean, that's what we're doing. So, you know, there is a voice in the back of my head that's like, dude, this is a lot of talking. And it's a lot. And it's a lot of commitment, but I actually enjoy the commitment. I find it gratifying in a sense. It's almost like podcast boot camp, you know? So anyway, that's a long way of just saying, I'm sorry, but checking in here, we're in Wyoming. The air is thin, man. I can barely breathe. I posted one story from Jackson. I was just kind of planning on hanging low with my family. Lo and behold, my man Matt Chuck Tech calls me immediately and says, are you in Jackson? I'm in Jackson. I live here, dude. And I was like, oh, man, I totally forgot. So I'm going to go play some. I extended my trip one day. I'm going to fly home Friday morning instead of Thursday morning. I'm going to play some golf with Matt Cardis, a.k.a. at Golf in Your State. That'll be fun. And then I'm going to crash at his house and hopefully not burn it down, which I've never done. So I don't know why I would be concerned about that. But, you know, these things, as a guest, you know, anything is possible. So anyway, enjoy today's podcast. It's basically two car rides, right? One with me and Stu Bone talking about architecture and golf, and then one with Mr. Hafa driving out to Ballyneal, just shooting the shit. You know, it's not top quality content, but it's content. And if you're in the car, it's better than Alanis Morissette. All right. I mean, well, actually, I really like Alanis Morissette. So if you are Alanis Morissette, I would like to pay some respect. That would be really ironic. All right. Anyway, Jackson's wonderful. Like I said, the air is pretty thin. I'm frequently dizzy and short of breath. So I'm looking forward to seeing at least how far the ball goes on Thursday afternoon when we play. And we recorded some other great pods this week with Jim Urbina, who's a master shaper. Spent a lot of his life working on projects with Pete Dye and Tom Doak. And now is hopefully going to unveil some news for us in the near future about a project that he can be the full architect of. I'm getting text messages. Me and my dad are going to go to this random lake up here, Brooks Lake. Everyone got scared because some guy told us there was a guy who got eaten by a bear, and so no one wants to come, but me and dad don't give a fuck. Anyway, yeah, so we got Jim Urbina coming up in a week probably, and then we got Sean Tully, who's another steward of the game, a superintendent of the Meadow Club, the first Alistair McKenzie course in the United States. So anyway, we got a lot of great pods coming up, and enjoy the one from today. And again, my apologies about last week. We're gonna seek to not do that again. So thank you for listening. Enjoy your day and enjoy these golfers in cars getting tee times. Have a good one. All right. Well, a little hot. There we go. Welcome to the Eric Lang Show, everybody. Very special episode. We've recorded on trains. We've recorded outside. And now we're recording in an American car. What do you say, Stu Bone, my special guest for the day?
I'm just really excited to be on the Eric Lang Show.
Your headphones are touching your mic. Maybe he's so Stu's driving. Are you going to do that?
For a while, at least.
I love it. Yeah. So we are. Where are we leaving, Stu? Fill us in. We've had quite a couple day golf adventure up here in NorCal, and we're departing a famous piece of property.
So today is Paso Tiempo in Santa Cruz, California. Yesterday was Spyglass and Spanish. The day before that was San Francisco GC. The day before that was Meadow Club.
It makes me smile just thinking about it.
Yeah, 100%.
I think, you know, we've talked about a lot of things. Stu's wearing a lob, so it's kind of, I can't. Do you want to hold a shotgun? Do you think you can do that?
I can hold a shotgun.
All right, you know what? We're going to pause it and get some better audio. Everybody, hold on. All right, we're back, and now we have, let's check these levels.
Test, test, test.
It's so much better. You can barely even hear the car. It's like we're in a Tesla.
It's like we're in a soundproof booth.
With an engine and wheels. It's kind of like, anyway, so we've had a great golf trip, and I think one of the coolest things about it for me, Stu, you started playing golf a year and a half ago. We met on Instagram almost a year ago now.
Yes.
And we played Rustic.
Rustic was the first round.
One of my favorite courses. Let me give you a little more heat on that mic. And tell me your version of the story.
So I had listened to the podcast that Malcolm Gladwell put out about private golf courses in LA.
If you haven't listened, you got to listen to it.
And there's a lot of bullshit in there.
But there's some BS.
But there's a lot of truth, too.
Yeah. Side note on that.
I heard that podcast because I think you told me to listen to it. And anytime someone tells me to do something, I write it down. Now the list is about 60 things to do deep, like articles and videos and stuff. But that Gladwell one I watched, I listened to, and I was like, ooh, it stung. But I saw some truth in it. And then later on, someone said, oh, hey, I know you mentioned this. You should listen to, and I can't remember what it was. It was like, oh, you know what it was? It was Shaq House. Shaq and his cohort got an interview with Malcolm. And they got Malcolm to basically agree or to admit that one of his main things in his media is to create a hardline point of view. And he agrees that not all golf courses fall under this category, which he basically purports are selfish, tax-evading Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, for me, one outcome of listening to that podcast was questioning the credibility of Malcolm Gladwell on other subjects, because real estate taxes are something that I know a lot about. And a lot of what he was saying there was bullshit.
You self-describe yourself as the biggest, what was it, slumlord in Arizona?
Absolutely not. We provide clean, safe housing for the good people of Flagstaff, Arizona.
And you live in
Carlsbad.
Encinitas, Carlsbad.
Yeah.
And you're a big fan of the GOAT.
Yes.
That's where you kind of started playing golf.
Yeah, it was a big part of what made me excited to play golf. The relaxed environment and the dogs. I got to bring my dog.
Big Bobo?
Yeah, Bobo.
Does Bobo ever interact with the golf balls?
No.
No?
No.
Just chills?
Totally chills. And he gets hot, you know. I have to give him a haircut before I take him out there.
Right. Bobo Rescue?
Yeah.
Big Rescue fans?
Yeah.
I mean, Stu, we're like the same person, except you're 8 inches taller than me.
and my index is maybe 10 strokes higher?
Yeah, for every inch, you've got 2 strokes.
There you go. That's it.
So we hooked up. You were like, Rustic Canyon, 9 a.m. Friday. And I was like, boom, done. And this was like a year ago when I hadn't even, to some extent, maybe it might have been the first time I had ever like gotten a random invite off Instagram and said, yeah, let's get random. Like, let's just play with people we don't know.
And that was with Clark and Stratton, who are two of the funnest people to play golf with.
Stratton is, it's almost unfair how funny he is. I can't hang out with him because I seem like I'm a lawyer.
That's how I felt with all three of you.
Yeah. But we had a great day. Rustic's obviously one of the top 100 courses you can play. Very, very wonderful piece of land. Gil Hance bringing it back to Jeff Shackelford. Full story. So then we continue playing golf and hanging out. And then you're like, let's go on a golf trip. This has been coming up for a minute now.
It has been. And I got to tell you, it was, like, ambitious.
The details of this trip?
Yeah, and the funny thing is that the days that you planned, which were Monday and Tuesday, one of the things that was remarkable is that you just had friends who hooked it up. Like,
yeah.
Getting to play Meadow Club when the course was closed with the groundskeeper.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
The super,
and he is, I mean, Tully is the man.
Tully is one of these guys where his information is so deep and complex that you almost question everything you've ever learned about what the fuck he's telling you, you know? And Tully messaged me off Instagram and he said, yo, whatever, love the podcast. I was like, oh, thanks. And then he was like, Meadow Club, whenever you want. And for me, Meadow Club has been one of those courses that I have wanted to play for a tremendously long period of time. It has sort of all these boxes that I really like to check when I see a golf course, you know? Stu, you know, you and I kind of differ in the sense that you really prefer golf on the water, and I do too, but I actually give extra points to a course inland that can still capture the imagination and the excitement of me with a club in my hand, you know? And I think, you know, so anyway, I was really looking forward to that. I guess what I really want to get to is you've been playing golf for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, I don't know what everyone else's trajectory is like, but I know my trajectory was, you know, golf kind of comes in chapters. Like the first year and a half for 2 years for me was like, just goddamn swing. Where's the ball going? What's a fade? I couldn't remember a fade, draw, hook, slice. I couldn't remember which was which for the longest time. And then it was like learning about player swings and etiquette and rules. And then at a certain point, I got tipped off to this idea of, oh, the golf course is a piece of art and there are different types. And I feel like one of the coolest things about this trip for me has been watching you kind of like
learn.
Yeah, I guess learn. Yeah, formulate your own opinions about where you pay your green space, because we all have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most interesting things is also just watching your life. I mean, it's funny because let's be honest, I watched Adventures in Golf. I thought the Slum Golf episode was like amazing, and I was a fan. And I reached out to you on Instagram, and then you showed up at Rustic Canyon, and you were like, let's be real friends, not just like paying lip service to the whole thing. And
right.
That was amazing. And then all of a sudden we're on a golf trip, and like it was pretty hilarious because you brought into play guys like Tully, guys like Ben, the Golf Hawk.
Golf Hawk shot down last night.
Yeah, guys like Gurry at SFGC. And these guys are amazing human beings that were completely generous in setting us up with amazing golf. And then, you know, you guys are talking and I'm just getting to learn, and my learning curve is crazy sharp.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, just to go back to that point about the people we play with, I think what a great example of a interesting, like, you know, Friends, you know, the show Friends, like there are six people on that show. I think the idea was, is that there are six classic demographics and we can all relate to at least one of them. And I think that's been interesting is like Sean, obviously Sean's listening. My parents are listening. Gary's listening and Ben's probably listening, but it's kind of interesting because all of you guys had such an impact on our lives. I mean, if you go back to each little thing that's happened, and it's almost like watching a ball trundle towards the hole, and it's like each blade of grass is a person that affects the ultimate outcome. And you know, we may think that a bad shot or a bad result is terrible, but who knows, it could lead to an amazingly heroic shot. Anyway, it's been really cool to watch each person kind of affect the golf trip and inform our, you know, here's Ben, great player, caddy has some of the best clubs, was really just inspired to hang, drove 3 hours to potentially only play 12 holes, jumping on it. Gary's one of these guys who you could sit on a 48-hour flight with Gary and never get bored. Conversational wizard, you know, just happy to hang. And Tully is basically an encyclopedia with two legs.
And then you can't forget my little brother, Mike Bone. What?
Mike Bone came out.
Who's Callaway Tech rep, dropping wisdom on the subjects of dimple count and dispersion and trajectory and, you know.
And just ripping hard draws. Hard draws, man. Like, and we had a lot in common just in other areas of our life that we found really wonderful. And your little bro, that was so cool, man.
That's awesome. It's funny because Mikey and I really weren't friends with each other for most of our 20s and 30s. And then I got into golf about a year and a half ago. And now he's one of my best friends.
You know, it's fascinating because, like, I have a similar story with my brother. And what's so crazy is, like, there again, golf transcends a game that uses gravity and dimples and grooves. Golf all of a sudden becomes much more like a pilgrimage or a tea ceremony that you just kind of look around and you're like, these are the people I'm with, you know. And even the people that, you know, we were in the fucking parking lot and Stu Bones over here, like, talking to a member of Pasa Tiempo. I would be shocked if you don't play with him.
Yeah, you know, Pasa Tiempo has like a vast delta between what you pay as just somebody coming off the street and what you pay as the guest of a member. And because my family has a house in Santa Cruz, I've been wanting to get, you know, to get to know somebody who's a member there. And we just threw it out in the parking lot, and he wanted to chat and wanted to hang out.
Yeah. Pediatrician. Great smile. loves health. It's great. So I guess, but, you know, the main thing for me that I found interesting is on a golf trip, you kind of, it's almost like a meal. You know what I mean? Like, we got cell phones?
That's my cell phone. I'm sorry.
I'm going to grab it.
Very unprofessional. Oh, it's
Michael Bone. Yeah. He wants to be on the podcast.
Yeah, bring him on.
What's up, Mike Bone? You're live on the podcast.
Oh, hey, just calling to say what a great time it was, and that, Eric, you forgot your charger.
What charger? Oh, my little, it's fine, my battery pack, that's fine. It's actually made it a year and a half.
That's not bad.
You can have it. That's got like 9 charges in it.
Bro, I'm going to sell it on eBay. This is Eric.
Mike, let's talk highlights of the golf trip for you, Mike. What do you got?
One, the best highlight of the trip was making a new friend.
Mike's got a little dryness to his sense of humor. It's sort of crispy out there like Carnoustie.
Yeah, silly boys. All right, have fun on your podcast.
All right, brother. Have a good drive. Toodles. See you soon.
Later, bro.
He is a good dude.
Yeah.
That's so funny. That how on earth could a ridiculous game designed for designed in America at least to keep a class of people together? How could that bring together two brothers that are to some extent, in my case, forlorn? How does that happen?
I mean, I don't know. He's got, like, for example, he lives in Fresno, California. He's into, like, guns and pickups.
I like guns.
Cool.
Honestly, though, I would get a fucking gun, dude. Because, like, I was thinking about it, and, like, if someone's coming into my house, I want to kill them. Yeah, I know that sounds crazy.
I hear you. I'm a big believer in the way that the law of attraction works, sort of metaphysically.
So you're saying the bullet will, like, do a 180?
Like Neo. No, I'm saying that, like, we really call into our experience what we sort of put out into the universe, that vibrations are attracted to one another. And that if you have a vibration of fear and that something bad is going to happen and I need to have a gun. But, you know, that might be going a little too deep for this particular podcast.
So you think just stick with the 9-iron under my bed?
Yeah. I mean, you could do some real damage with a 9-iron.
You know, the reason why I have a 9-iron is because I'm convinced that Jimmy Walker is in the mafia and his nickname is Jimmy 9-iron. And so I'm pretty sure that I could... I'm pretty sure he's murdered at least 17 people with his 9-iron. Maybe not the same exact make, model, but, like, he's probably going with a blade. I would imagine cavity back would... You want a stiff shaft? You want an extra... No, okay. Anyway, so I guess for me, one of the most interesting things about this trip was watching... You know, because, Stu, we came out here, and to be super specific, you were like, Links at Spanish Bay is my favorite course on earth.
Which I now feel a little bit sheepish.
Do you really?
About that, yeah.
But why?
I think because there was definitely, well, I never played, I mean, come on, Meadow Club, which is a Alistair McKenzie design.
First Alistair McKenzie course in the United States.
And then we go to SFGC, and I get to play a Tillinghast design.
Yep, yep.
And just also people like Tully, people like Gurry, people like you just sort of pointing out the, you know, the bunkering or, you know, how the camouflage works or the slope and just all these different things. And then I don't know, my tastes changed a little bit. I think
Did they
also,
really?
I think also when I first got into golf, I was sort of embarrassed about the white privilege elitist thing.
Right.
And I definitely wanted to play Muni golf.
Right.
And, you know, support juniors and kids that were coming out of rough neighborhoods like Oceanside at Goat Hill Park and stuff like that. And I still very much I'm connected to that, but I think I kind of learned that it's not a crime to play a gorgeous, elite private club.
Well, you know what's funny is I agree 100%, and I like Muni golf just as much as anybody. You know what I mean? I've been lucky enough to play some nice courses. You know, don't need to name names here, but... Any Pine Valley members out there? I could use a hand.
Dude, that is one of the craziest things about traveling with you is watching your phone light up on Instagram with people inviting you to play elite private country clubs when you show up in their neighborhood. It's awesome.
But the truth is, I'll play with anybody anywhere. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm not holding out for some special thing. I'm not. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think, you know what's funny though is to put it in your perspective. You're talking about the example of, you know, playing nice golf courses, feeling sort of guilty. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
You love nice restaurants.
Yes.
What's the difference? What's the difference between paying for a piece of art on a plate?
One of the differences is that anyone who can come up with the dough can walk into a nice restaurant and eat there.
Okay, respect. And you can't necessarily with dough just get into any course.
Also, there is I'm going to be a downer here, but there's an environmental impact to running a golf course.
Respect.
And
next podcast.
Less people playing it. Yeah. less people playing it, you know, means sort of less bang for your buck on that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll talk to someone about the environmental impact next year.
or not.
I mean, that's one of the things I like about sustainable golf courses, you know, where you're on top of a landfill or you're in a place that can actually support the water requirements or whatever it is. But even still, I mean, I play in Los Angeles. I mean, I drive an electric car. Respect. But I think what's interesting is, yeah, you're totally right. There is something weird about, like, needing to... My phone's... Who's calling me now? Oh, should we... I bet it's a telemarketer. Should we see?
We should tell.
Hello? It's a total telemarketer.
Hi, my name is Madison Brown. I'm calling on behalf of Spectrum Internet.
Oh, Spectrum Internet. Is everything okay? Do I have low yes. megabits per second upload? What is it? What do you got?
It was, sir.
Huh? You want to sell me something?
Just call me a reporter for quality. We just want to say thank you for being a valued Spectrum Internet customer.
Oh, you're welcome.
To show our appreciation, you can have access to our new streaming service app free for 7 days.
That's okay. I use PGA Tour Live. I'm all good.
What?
Thank you. I gotta go. I appreciate the call, though. Thank you.
Certainly appreciate that. This is a brand new app that lets you choose your 10 favorite.
Oh, lines. She didn't hear me. That's too bad. I tried to be nice. Anyway, so you play with a caddy this time. First time you ever played with a caddy. I get that question a lot on Instagram. What's it like to play with a caddy? What's the tip? What's the protocol? What was your experience walking into it as a, let's call it a virgin?
Well, okay, so again, this I don't know where I get this from, and I don't want this, but there was initially feelings of guilt. It was like a grown man carrying your shit around for you. You know, and it doesn't feel that good. But then, like, he's helping me read my putts, and he's right all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm making putts and having fun, and he and I are chatting about what's going on in his life and what he's been through and all that stuff. And, you know, I really enjoyed his company, and I had a great time. And then he got paid. And it was awesome, and I loved having a caddy. And I love not carrying a bag.
Not carrying a bag is like, it's like floating. It's funny because, you know, they have caddies at Wilshire. I love all the caddies. Some of you guys are listening to this podcast right now. I fucking love you guys. I like the caddies at Wilshire more than I like most people on planet Earth. You know, and that's saying a lot. I haven't met most people on planet Earth. I've met a couple. But there is such a genuine excitement for the dual experience of a golf game being two people. Right. And one of the worst things I've ever had happen on a golf course is when I asked my caddy, how far do we have? And he goes, I don't know. You've got about 160. And I was like, okay. I was pretty sure that's my bag on your shoulder. And I was pretty sure that you're the one giving me all the goddamn advice on this motherfucker. You know what I mean? I don't know. I've never been here.
Yeah. Usually, I mean, with the guys that we had, there's a real generosity of spirit. They really, I mean, it felt like they really were supporting us, and it felt great.
And I mean, on some level, you know, when you go to the GOAT, we talked about this a little bit, like by working with a caddy, if you can afford it, even if you can't afford it, it's good to do once to feel it out, because you learn a lot about how to play golf, because they're basically trying to talk you off of a miss. They're trying to tell you where to land in a general area, which may not be at the flag. And you're also supporting the economy, right? I mean, caddies are out there. It's not a volunteer job. I mean, they're showing up for work, and if you don't take a caddy, they're not getting work. And I do feel guilty about that. That said, you know, if someone wants to call my boss and tell him I need more money to pay for caddies, I'm happy to give you the phone number. That would be actually a great hashtag. Eric needs caddy dough. Because I do love it. And some of my, you know, caddies are these mystical, you know, like guides, right? And they don't always just guide, you know, your swing and your shot. Sometimes they give you swing advice, which can be really helpful. It can also be totally detrimental. But sometimes they also guide you into a way of thinking about your own life in that moment. And those for me are some of the top three most memorable moments of my life was having a caddy whisper something in my ear about this experience, right?
Yeah, and conversely, you never know how you might impact their life. You know, especially if you're really willing to open up and share and talk to them and have a good conversation at some point during the round.
Right.
You never know.
That's wonderful. I never thought of that.
I really had a great time talking to Pete.
Yeah. Pete was a good guy. Yeah. Young guy. Yeah. And so, you know, to go back to this whole links at Spanish Bay thing, because it was cracking me up, because you were like, we were drawing out the itinerary, and we were kind of, I'm kind of bad at making plans. Did you notice that? I'm kind of bad at making plans.
Yeah, I did. But then look how well your end of the trip came together.
Right.
I mean, it was like divine perfection. You couldn't have planned it better.
I try to make a trip with basically, you know, like a couple features, like every golf hole must have a tee box and a green and a hole. It doesn't have to have bunkers. It doesn't really even have to have a fairway necessarily. I try to just make sure that the minimum pillars are there for a trip. For example, a flight and a rental car and potentially a bed. But, you know, other than that, like, I like just figuring out as we go. And I think that, you know, that worked to our favor. So you were like, I want to play Links in Spanish Bay. And, you know, I suppose I could have been like, nah, I don't want to play there. But I'm really glad we did. I think for me, I really gained a lot of information there because it's one of the courses. It's really, I think I still haven't played PG. I haven't played MP. And there's, I think that's about it up there. But for me, I got a lot out of it because I was like, oh, okay. Like this is, I learned about you by watching, by going there, you know, by seeing like, well, first of all, I mean, how difficult the course is. Like, it is hard.
I don't understand that because normally I tear up Spanish Bay and I get spanked at Spyglass.
Right.
And yesterday was the opposite. And I mean, maybe some of it had to do with the fact that I was trying to discover why everybody bags on Spanish Bay.
Right.
During the round.
You were trying to put the ball in like, all these awful places.
Well, no. I was like, I asked the guy when we were paying our greens fees, like, why does everybody bang on this place?
Yeah, he made the weirdest face when you asked him that.
Totally.
You're like, why does everyone hate your golf course? And he just sort of like... I felt so bad for him because it was sort of like being like, hey, why is your mom ugly? And he was dude, like, ah.
He works for the Pebble Beach Golf Company and he gets subbed around between different
right.
courses.
Capital D douche company. No, Pebble Beach is great. I love it. It's fantastic. Give me Spyglass every day of the week. Ben actually said something interesting is members at
Cyprus
will talk about, or residents of Monterey and stuff will talk about how Spyglass is potentially a better course. Now, Ben is obviously a player. Like, I think, I'm assuming his handicap's plus one.
Minus two, or plus two.
Plus two, yeah. So when I'm looking at him, he's talking about Cyprus being underwhelming as a basically a driver wedge layout. And I can see that. I mean, Cyprus is pretty wide open. It's stunning. It's more of a postcard course, whereas Spyglass, you're looking at lines and strokes and... You know,
tee boxes.
Oh, the tee boxes. The biggest downfall of the entire trip was the sanded tee boxes at Spyglass.
Yeah.
That was just, it sort of just felt like they need a little bikini wax, you know? a little rough. Sorry.
I thought it was great nonetheless. I mean.
I'm not knocking. Yeah, we had a great time.
But yeah, seeing those tee boxes line up. The way he lines them up and then he directs you in the wrong direction sometimes and all that kind of stuff is really fun.
I guess I'd love to talk with Fried Egg or Sean Tully about Spyglass because I know that they're not really RTJ, big RTJ fans. I think that Tully said he likes Spyglass. I think it's someday, though, what I found interesting about this trip, and I think about, I already feel this way to a large extent about golf in general, is the course is merely a stage. It's not the play. Right, the course is merely an empty theater. You walk into it, and it's a wonderfully improvised herald night of four people going out there and seeing what's going to happen. They have no idea. They have no idea what jokes they're going to tell, what they're going to talk about, what questions they're going to ask, who they're going to run into, what putts are going to drop, what shots are going to go in the ravine. And, you know, I think that my phone is not on silent, but I think also... you know, it's just so interesting to see that happen in real time. I mean, how much of an effect do you think, Stu, as an 18 handicap?
Yeah.
Year and a half playing golf. How much do you... It's pretty good, man. How much of an effect do you think solid play creates enjoyable experience?
Well, I don't know. I read the plaque on the sidewalk today at Pasatiempo in front of the house that Alistair McKenzie lived and died in. And it said that... the overcoming of obstacles is a source of great enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
And so even like when I hit some bad shots, I mean, God, I hit more bunkers. With all this like sophisticated bunkering from all these designers who played this week, I was in the bunker way more than normal.
You got your money's worth.
Yeah, but then I also played some great shots out of the bunkers.
Yeah.
Which is more fun than anything.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I was just, even when I hit them bad, something good would happen after that, you know?
I had a very interesting experience isolated today to Pasatiempo. I played really well. I was, well, the front nine, I had a
amazing
triple and a double. And I ended up coming in off the front eight over after a couple other bogeys.
But you were tearing up the back.
But the back, I was one over standing on a birdie putt on 16. But I was playing really well. It was tight golf. I had two birdies on the back. But my experience, very interestingly, at Pasatiempo, I don't know if this is an architectural thing. I don't know if it's within me. But you know, I've played a lot of golf, under pressure. Back up. I haven't played golf under pressure, but I've found golf to be nerve-wracking, just like the rest of us. I felt much more anxiety on the fairways of Pasatiempo than I have in a while. And I don't know if it was the design of the hole. I don't know if it was that I started really caring. I don't know if it was I wanted to respect Mackenzie's genius.
I feel like part of it is the fortification of the greens.
Yeah.
Like, the bunkering is so dramatic.
It is.
And so your approach shots, there's a lot of opportunity to miss.
I don't know what it was, though. And then even over that putt, I had like a fucking four-footer on 16 that I pulled. And I was like, I was nervous, dude.
Yeah, but 16 is the most sloped green I've ever seen in my life.
It was out. It was right edge. It was inside right with speed. But I think for me it mattered because, well, here's the other thing I'd like to ask you. 16 mattered to me because of the story of the hole.
Right.
The truth is I was just standing on a piece of grass that was new for 2018. It wasn't probably the same seed that was there in 2016 or 2010 or definitely not 1927 or whenever
it was. And the story is that Mackenzie said it was his favorite par four he'd ever seen.
So these are all the stories. So on what level is, if you take Spyglass and make it private, all of a sudden give everyone an orange jacket, you know, and then you make Cypress a public track that's a little bit overgrown and probably some brown spots, on what level then does it flip? Like how much of golf is the story and what can we learn from that, and what can we sort of, take away from that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, because the story is important, obviously.
Yeah, so it's funny because when I first started playing golf, I got a resident card at Torrey Pines and started playing there a lot, which obviously the Torrey Pines South course has story.
Yeah.
And it was nerve-wracking.
Story Pines.
It's Story Pines. Story. It was nerve-wracking, and I like got my ass kicked every time I played it. And then my wife and I started going out there at twilight, you know, and just surfing around the fun holes. I'm putting the microphone down because we're passing these highway patrolmen, and I don't want to get...
Are you allowed to podcast and drive?
Riding dirty.
I just farted.
That's...
It's going to be very bad. I had eggs Benedict.
Dude, at least you didn't have those pancakes, Mikey.
Oh, God.
Anyways, as soon as I started surfing around and just having fun on Torrey Pines at night,
yeah,
like, then I started, when I started playing it on Saturday morning or whatever, the anxiety just went away.
Interesting.
So just getting reps and just sort of becoming more casual with something like that makes it, I don't know, the story goes away. So I guess I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
The story does bring anxiety and all that.
Yeah. And I think for me, the, you know, like when you go play a fancy golf course, I feel enveloped in the story to an extent that I almost... I have trouble enjoying it, actually. Sort of like when you go to a museum and you're like, well, is this a Jackson Pollock or is this splatter paint? So much of art is the story that the little like information card on the side where you're like, this painting depicts a cloudy sky. And you're like, it's a white canvas, dude.
Well, also this is where there's a certain privilege that comes with being an 18 handicap with a super sharp learning curve, is that I don't really go out there expecting to hit every shot really well.
Right.
And you actually, you know, pointed out once or twice that I might have started doing that.
What you did, well, I remember
But it's okay to hit bad shots. And,
yeah.
And so, like, for me, I don't know that I have that same level of expectation, so I don't know that I have that same issue.
You know, I think what was interesting is early on in the week, you were like, the worst thing I can do is hit the fairway for my next shot. Like, you have a hard time putting two shots together.
There's an inverse relationship between the quality of my drive and the quality of my second shot. So,
yeah.
So just hitting decent shots means the next one's going to be decent, too.
That's a wonderfully fertile period of time in golf, though, is to be at that point. Because you'll soon get to the point where you'll probably be like, all right, I'm in the fairway. That's where I should be. I'm in there, what, 6 to 7 hopefully out of 10 times, 5 out of 10. And now I know what it's like to hit a fucking blistering wedge to 4 feet.
And I should be greening par fours and two every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel like that right now.
Well, you'll get there, man. I saw already so much in your swing change.
Yeah.
I see an airport. I see planes. I see tarmac. There's a PJ.
So on the left side is all the PJs of like the Google and the Facebook execs and all the Silicon Valley dudes, which you can look at from the terminal over there. And it's kind of fun because if you can see the tail numbers sometimes.
San Jose Airport. You research tail numbers.
I love knowing who owns the PJ. I don't know why.
Yeah, I guess. I've never even thought of that, dude.
We all have our weird things, you know?
All right, well, I guess we're about to... Oh, here comes a plane landing. Jeez, the airports are so cool. I guess that's about it. We're about to drop this car off, I guess.
Yeah, Avis.
Curbside. Whoa, Avis didn't give us any fucking money to say their name. This podcast is not brought to you by any rental car company whatsoever. For the record, I use a different company. It's the same color as Mikey's bag.
Mikey rolls a gold Callaway staff bag, and he is not ashamed of it.
It's a big staff bag. He brought extra shafts. He brought 12 different types of golf balls. He was wearing rain gloves, and it wasn't raining. I was like, Mike, what? Like, what? He's like Phil Mickelson.
I love how much Mikey loves golf.
Yeah, well, he and I have the same affliction, which causes us to love things that are pleasurable to a degree that is potentially most normal people don't approach.
Yeah, that might be the recovery connection, which I'm a part of too.
Exactly. We all are unfortunately probably recovering from an over par round. All right. Well, here we go. Got some airlines on the right passing through. Stu, I'm sad to say goodbye.
Yeah, me too, man.
I'm going to head off to Colorado.
That was one of the other realizations this week that was amazing, was that this is your life.
This is it.
Like, I'm packing up to go on a golf trip. I'm going on a golf trip. And all the while, I'm thinking, this is what Eric does most of the time.
Yeah.
You counted how many nights in hotels right. So far this year?
That's right. So we counted on the first night of the trip. You were like, how many nights of the year are you out of town? And I was like, I don't know, maybe 100. And then I was like, you know, for shits and giggles, let's count. And today is what? July, what's the date? Today is July 19th. So we're 200 days into the year. And we counted, well, at the time we were 196, and I counted 92 days out of town. And so now it's 96 and we're 196. So
Soldier.
Yes, my life, man. Awesome. I get tired though, and I have canceled a couple trips actually for August. I'm just stay home. I'm going to just lay down with my dog. I'm going to turn it on. I got central air recently. I'm going to crank up the central air. I'm just going to lay in bed under my down comforters while I blast the central air. Yeah. And then I'm going to like just burn. I'm going to have an open fire in the middle of the Laurel Canyon and, you know, just contribute to do my part, you know.
That's awesome.
For the world, for global warming. All right. Thanks for listening. I'll probably record something else in this podcast. So take a little break. There'll be some music. And then you'll probably hear soothing sounds of me in the sauna. Or not. Or it could just be totally not hot. It could be cold. It's impossible. Any thoughts, Stu, on what we should do next?
Well, just have so much fun at Ballyneal.
Man.
I'm so excited for all you guys to get to go on that trip. It's going to be amazing.
I'm excited, man. It's going to be good. And, you know, just hopefully there will be a couple more birdie putts out there, you know?
Dude.
All right, rental car return.
All right. Hi, everyone. It's nice talking to
Thanks
you.
Thanks for joining me, Stu. It's been a long time coming.
Oh, that was awesome.
Ciao for now. All right, time for some quick reads here. We got ads, folks. Ads on the podcast. It's big news, big news. All right, here we go. Email from Jeff. Scripts below for Butcher Box. All right, Butcher Box. Really excited to tell you all about our new sponsor, Butcher Box. I actually am. That's a true statement. In fact, they just delivered one of these delicious boxes to my house. Unfortunately, I'm not home, so I won't get to have it for a while. But anyway, it says, mail is always more fun when there's delicious meat inside it. That's sounds like it's not legal, but I have heard a lot of people do tell me that ButcherBox is delicious. I'm excited to get home and try it. High-quality, healthy protein you can trust. 100% grass-fed and finished beef. I don't know what finished means when they say that. Maybe it's 100% dead, which is ideal. Free range organic chicken. I love chicken. I don't know. Chicken gets knocks. Like, I don't know, but I'll give me a good chicken au jus, like a good, like, jidori. I go to Jamaica, get some jerk chicken. I am all about chicken, even though it's kind of the, I don't know, it's like the stepchild of all the meats. Heritage breed pork. There it's, quote, old world pork, unquote, before they bred out all of the fat and flavor to make it, quote, the other white meat. AKA, this is pigs the way they were meant to be. Oh boy, I apologize, vegans. I have some friends that are vegans, so I apologize if this is offending you, but I'm just making money. It's incredibly convenient, delivered right to your door on dry ice, free shipping anywhere in the 48 states. That's actually a pretty good deal. Unbelievable taste. There's a huge difference in the taste between animals raised on pasture and those fed grain in concentrated animal feedlot operations. That's obviously true. Now, the truth is, I tried to be vegetarian, but I just couldn't get down with it. I just find myself kept craving meat. And so it does make me sad that there are
you know, all these inhumane and basically unhealthy for the human ways of eating meat. But it sounds like you're good with ButcherBox. Exclusive and hard to get. Ooh, I like that. Outside of ButcherBox, this type of high-quality meat is hard to find. For those who live in food deserts, I don't know what a food desert is. Maybe, I don't know, maybe... I don't know if you don't live in Los Angeles, but I feel like if you live in, I don't know, it's near impossible. For those who live in big cities with expensive supermarkets like Whole Foods, their prices and variety are hard to beat. Exclusively for listeners of the Eric Lang Show, oh, get ready. ButcherBox is offering $20 off plus free bacon on your first box. Two easy ways to try ButcherBox. Visit ButcherBox.com and use discount code Eric, E-R-I-K. Even easier than that, just visit ButcherBox.com/Eric, ButcherBox.com/Eric. That's an even, there's an even a link to click on the podcast description. Oh, look how easy to make it is to get to your door. All right, next, Greater Than Sports Drink. These guys messaged me on Instagram and they were like, yo, do you mind if we send you some stuff? And I just sent them my address. And all of a sudden, these little sippy cups of juice came to the door and I don't hate it. It's actually pretty good. Summertime equals hot weather. Golf is tolling physically, and if you walk, that's 5-plus miles and 2,000 calories plus burned. Respect on the mathematics there, Jeff. I drink this new sports drink called Greater Than Sports Drink. I have drank it. That's true. It's the anti-Gatorade because it's made with real ingredients. That's true. It's not super sweet. It's actually just kind of a mellow drink. I actually sometimes put sparkling water in there, and I got a little Aperol spritz without alcohol. A blend of coconut water, juices, and sea salt. This recipe makes me hydrated. Yeah, that will make you hydrated too if you drink it because it's liquid and it doesn't have a lot of sugar. Refreshing, delicious, and nutritious. It's got what my body craves. Jeff, we need to work on these scripts. My body doesn't really just crave juice. It's got electrolytes to replenish, and in fact, it's double the electrolytes and half the sugar of normal sports drinks. Holy shit. Those are good numbers. So order yours direct to your home. There's even a subscription program. Use code Eric at checkout at drinkgt.com. Drink G as in go, T as in time.com. Vice Golf, vicegolf.com. Top performing golf balls, half the price, folks. I said it first. You heard it first. What? If you watch the Golf Channel, you'll recognize me because I'm the guy in those commercials for Vice Golf Balls. Jeff, just crushing the script game. I interrupt people's golf games to tell them about the monetary discounts of Vice Golf Balls. If you're playing golf and listening to this podcast, watch out. I'm behind. What? Jeff, watch out. I'm behind that bunker you're aiming at right now because I promise to stop. I don't know, Jeff. We got to work on this script. Top performing golf balls, half the price. You save because Vice Golf does not show up in retail stores. There's no middleman. So they're just literally going straight to you, straight to the consumer, saving you money on your balls. Because everyone knows you can't play golf without balls. Adidas golf shoes. I've worn a lot of golf shoes since I started playing golf 7 years ago. There's nothing better than the comfort and stability of Adidas golf shoes. Try the Tour C360 or the Adidas Bounce. I actually like the cross-knit Boost. It's kind of the hybrid between sneakers and golf shoes. Tell them what you usually wear. Oh, yeah, I just did. I told you that I usually wear the cross-knit Boost. I'm one step ahead of you, Jeff. Versatile, comfortable, weatherproof, and made from premium materials. And they're cool, let's face it. Adidas is the coolest golf shoe. I like Adidas. I'm wearing Stan Smiths right now. I'm in bed. Wearing Stan Smiths in bed, the knit ones. I got NMDs on the floor. I got some Ultra Boosts in the suitcase ready to go. Visit your golf retail store. We're going to get, hopefully, a code for ya. That'll be nice. All right, everybody. Thanks for bearing with me. Those are the reads. Back to the podcast. All right, welcome back to the Eric Lang Show. This is part two of the On the Road podcast. We're in an unnamed Japanese pickup truck driving to the middle of Colorado. How you doing, Hafe?
What's going on?
Hafe's here. He's not even rocking headphones.
Nope. I'm freeballing.
Freeballing, dude, but you sound great.
That's good.
I've experienced a lot of different audio scenarios on this golf trip.
Well, this is my second time on the show, so I'm a pro now. So.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks.
Good to have you back. How's your life? You've had a couple big pieces of news in your life.
I have a beautiful new addition to the family, June, little 10-week-old baby.
Future caddy, maybe?
Probably not. maybe a golfer. We hope probably won't be.
No?
I don't know. We'll see. I'm not going to push it.
Her name is June?
June Marion Hafer.
June Marion Hafer.
Yes, sir.
June came from...
June, well, we liked the name, and then my wife and I, Lindsay, got engaged in June. Oh. And so we thought it was a cool name, different name.
It's a good month.
We couldn't agree on a family name. So
we you were searching back through your history and nothing came up?
Yeah, like Agatha, not a great name.
It's kind of a dark name, actually.
Yeah, it's not fun. So we figured we'd just go with something cool and has a little meaning to us, so we liked it.
I like that. If you're hearing Hafer's voice wiggle, it's because the freeway here has got a little wiggle on it.
There's a little wiggle on this road.
It's actually, we're not even on a freeway. I think we're on a state highway right now. We're in a silver pickup with about six golf bags in the back, trailing a British SUV to be yet to be named, with three VIPs, maybe four VIPs.
There are a few VIPs in that vehicle up there. Akbar Chisti.
Oh, Wyatt's negotiating a big pass.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Akbar Chisti of Seamus Golf is in the back seat. Wyatt Holiday up front. Follow in the who's navigating?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to be honest.
Anyway, we're in the middle of Colorado, and the license plate matches the landscape. Not entirely. How is the sky green in the Colorado license plate?
The legalized marijuana.
Is that what it is? Green smoke? I mean, I was thinking, you know, so the people who are listening to this podcast heard yesterday, literally, Stu Bone and I going to San Jose Airport. Then time travel. We get to San Jose. I get on a plane. You get on a plane from Philly.
Yep.
Denver. Meet up at a fucking weird Airbnb.
The stuffed animals on the stairs really set the vibe.
Dude, that Akbar picked an Airbnb that I'm pretty sure he got paid to stay there.
He tried to blame it on me. He asked for suggestions, and I gave him three options. He picked it.
Right.
So it's all him.
Akbar is a great golf trip bro.
Akbar is the king of festivities when it comes to golf trip. He knows how to set it up. He knows how to get the right people in the right places at the right times.
Can you whoa, Jesus, look at the fucking windshield. This thing was wiped clean like 20 minutes ago. Yep. And we must have hit 500 bugs, some big ones.
True that.
What? Let's talk about the golf trip. Hey, you've been on a couple good golf trips.
Yep.
Well, what sticks out to you as a great golf trip?
I think a
gangster.
A big one is.
Wait, while he's talking, he's going to negotiate a pass.
Hold on a second. I'm going to say hi. Sorry, we had a conference with our convoy here.
It's like a drag race.
I think a big part of a good golf trip is the group of guys that are on it.
Right. Have you ever done a golf trip with girls?
Technically, I mean, my wife and I, our honeymoon.
She's female.
Our honeymoon was a golf trip.
Really?
We got engaged at a golf course.
Bro, baller.
Yeah.
But Mom Jeans is not playing a ton of golf.
No, Mom Jeans, is rearing a brand new baby girl. So
that's work.
She's working hard. Very, very, very hard work.
If this was a childbirth podcast, we could really dig into that.
We could dig in, but let's go back to the golf thing.
I've been told I need to get to the golf more quickly. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fucking do that because my main interest is in being liked. No, I mean, it's like, hey, I'm not listening to the podcast.
That's true.
No, but I mean, like, no, if someone says, hey, please do this, like, chances are they're right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, all right. So a good golf trip is the group of people that are involved, male or female. But it's, and, you know, obviously picking a really good destination is important, but I think it's all the people that go on it. How right. well they get along. You know, obviously, there's a few people I've been on this one and the last one we went on. I didn't know anybody on the last one. Aside from two people.
What, at Sand Valley?
Yeah, at Sand Valley.
Proper. That was a big one. That was like, how many people were on that? Like 18? 12?
Was that? Yeah, I think like 12, maybe a little bit more.
I can't remember. I might be imagining people.
And that, for the most part, it was great. I mean, I've got some really good friends that came out of it, and this trip seems to be shaping up the same way.
Did we meet on that trip?
We officially met on that trip, like, right. in person, yeah.
We had been sexting for a while.
Yo, we sexted hard. I slid in your DMs. Like,
you were sending me lens pics and all types of shit. You got some fat lenses.
I do have some fat, girthy lenses.
Expensive. Hey, even if they're secondhand, it doesn't mean they're
it
not.
Listen, the little wear and tear still gets around the course.
The main thing is just where you point it, you know?
Yeah, it's how you... It's how you move that focus ring around.
A big part of golf trips is a repertoire of dick jokes.
Huge. About 80% of conversations revolve around dick jokes.
You need to be very prepared for just like childlike humor, which I really enjoy.
We know.
So wait, we're coming into a little town here. This town is called Welding? No. Spanning? Plains. Panini? Fleming.
Panini.
I'm going to go with Fleming. Nope. Wilson. I cannot read. Framing? Appalling. What does it say? Fleming. I had it.
Fleming.
Got it.
Fleming, Colorado.
Fleming, Colorado, folks. Elevation 4,240 feet.
Population 4.
Oh, we're looking at three of them right now. They're holding up the sign. So golf trip, right? I think one of the great things, I'm curious to know, actually, those of you listening at home, like what makes a golf trip, right? Like, cause I think everybody probably has different types of golf trips they go on. By the way, this is what a fascinating town we're in. All there is a train, a bunch of silos. There's a gas station.
A co-op elevator.
It was a gas station. Anyway, it's also hot as balls right now. It's 90, 96.
96 right now. We're cooling down. We were 99 a minute ago.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious to know and to talk about that because I know a lot of people go on golf trips with family. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go on golf trips with old friends, longtime friends. A lot of people go on golf trips. But I think, I don't know if it's as common to go on these kind of golf trip mixers. It's like a mixer,
you
know?
It's like a mixer.
I feel kind of like I'm, you know, which I actually find, I place a lot of value on the randomness of those mixers and who you're going to meet. And like, you know, it's almost like the cafeteria on the first day of school, you know? Like there's that moment of, who is everybody? I forgot everybody's name.
How's this going to go? Which one's the weird one? It's usually me.
Is it me again?
Like going on, you know, trips with your friends. I've done those. Those are fun. Trips with your family. Those are fun. But these are different because, like you said, you don't really know what's going to happen. Like right. You don't know how everyone's going to jive. You don't know if, you know, there's somebody in there that could be a new friend. And you definitely don't know what kind of golf everybody's into. And everybody, you know, after the first round, they're like, what'd you shoot? And by the last round, nobody's asking what anybody shot. And we're usually playing as one large group because we stop caring so much about our scores and we're just more focused on having fun.
Do you think on some level score becomes or serves as a way to relate?
It's a weight. It's a burden.
W-E-I-G-H-T?
It's a burden upon golfers, I think.
Really? It's a sandbag?
I haven't really kept my score in, I don't know, a couple months.
Really?
Just because it was, I didn't.
Is that because it's painful for you, Christian?
Yeah, you've seen me golf.
I've seen you play.
You've seen me play. Oh, well, birdie triple.
You are one of the most hot and cold golfers I've ever seen in my life.
It is true, and it's literally hot and cold within 30 seconds.
You'll literally stripe it to like 290,
no,
and then shank it 60.
Correct.
And then you'll have a brilliant shot out of wherever you found yourself.
Correct.
And then,
yeah, this is my golf game. And somehow I get it around. So that's why I stopped keeping score for that. But I was also kind of out of the trip that we went on last year. We just naturally, nobody kept scoring. We were just trying to hit fun shots and play cool golf shots. And not really, it's not like if I shoot, you know, 72, I get a prize at the end of it.
You know what I mean? No.
I'm more out there for the experience of it all and hanging out. And score has its place in the game for sure, but on a lot of these trips, it's not really about that. It's more about just having fun and cutting loose and seeing, like, if I hit a ball and I'm in the middle of the fairway, that's cool, but there might be a feature and I'll walk over there and drop a ball and take a purple shafted Honma and sling it around.
Is that a euphemism?
It could be.
Purple shafted Honma.
It could be. Talk to Akbar about that. He knows.
You more follow scorecards, not postcards, huh? Wait, no, the other way around.
Yeah,
postcards,
the other way around.
Not scorecards.
Yeah.
I'm a bit,
You got less sleep than I did, and you're more sane.
I have
sane.
2 hours of sleep. That's intense. Maybe three.
You realize that you slept less than Zach Johnson's round at the British Open.
I went to bed with Zach Johnson's mug in my face, and I woke up and saw him in his white sunglasses. Not a great start.
Had he played an under or over par round?
I think he was one under. One under?
So he did better.
Or
than
maybe
him.
More than that. I don't know. Right. Yeah, he definitely is a better golfer than I am.
No, I mean, like, he performed better at golf than you did at sleep.
Yeah, for sure.
You were, like, two over on your round.
I was my typical hot and cold.
And so the golf trip, right? It's and what do you get out of the golf trip, you think, that keeps you coming back? Because, I mean, you just had a child, and you know, your wife actually texted me.
Yeah.
You know that?
No.
She said, he hasn't left the house. He hasn't gone on a golf trip since Sand Valley. Take care of him. And some other stuff. And, you know, I responded. I tried to make her feel safe.
That's good.
And comfy. I mean, you know, we don't get too wild.
Not at all.
You don't drink.
I don't drink.
Do you tell people that? Because you just told my parents, at least. I know that.
Well, shout out to your parents. I don't drink.
What's up, Mom and Dad?
If you guys want to share a nice tea someday, we could do that.
Not a John Daly.
No, I don't drink. I haven't had a drink. I think it was 21, so it's been over 12 years.
And how do you manage that on a golf trip where everyone's drinking? Slinging them back.
Well,
I mean, a lot of people literally on our way right now to Ballyneal, a lot of people, I've already heard probably a good 20 minutes of conversation about the way they serve drinks,
yeah,
the strength of the drink, the type of the alcohol.
Well, that's a big thing just kind of in our culture anyway, is you're always surrounded by it. Like, when we go out to dinner, our friends usually have drinks. And
yeah.
So I'm used to it, and I think most people understand it and respect it, that I don't drink, and so they don't really push it on it. And if
there's, you know, always that one guy, and you're
there's
like,
always one guy who's a dick who's like, trouble. I don't trust anyone who doesn't drink. And I'm like, well, okay. Yeah. So I just, you know, make fun of that guy all night long and or avoid him. But most people are, you know, we're all adults, and everybody gets people's life choices. And I don't think, I'm not going to walk around and tell everybody they shouldn't drink because of my beliefs and my opinion on drinking.
I think one of the things, I guess, I'm wondering is, like, if you look at golf, if you look at a golf trip,
right,
as far as, like, you know, do you ever, you know, how do you best find the common ground between all these people?
Well, because like, drinking is like a bonding thing for a lot of people,
right?
It's like a way for people who maybe socially need a little bit of a booster to get into that, right. And for me, I don't, like, I'll just talk to people and hang out with people. And so I don't think that I miss out when I go on these trips and other people are drinking, and nobody really gets out of control. Like,
no.
It's not like anybody's.
Although Trevor got naked at Sand Valley and played two holes. What's up, Trevor?
Shout out Trevor's butt cheeks.
That was, honestly, I was like, dude, I'm with you. Like, I'm not with you right now, but I'm with you in general.
In spirit.
I've played naked golf.
I know.
Sober.
Yeah.
I, that's the way I think about it, is like at what point are you, so you're on the golf trip,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just thinking about the golf trip as a bigger kind of thing. Like, we all aspire to it. What are we looking to get out of it? Why do we do it?
Just, it's fun. You just want to have fun, and you want to, for most people, they want to get away from their day job. They want to get away from all the external pressure that comes down on them. And so they want to go on a golf trip. They want to drink, play golf, eat a lot of good food, and have fun, and that's it. It's not really more complicated than that, and that's what makes a lot of these trips so good, is it's a lot of times our structure is pretty much, we're gonna wake up and play golf.
Yeah.
And then whatever happens, and we might end up playing, you know, as 14 people with two dogs playing nine holes, right?
Snowball, man. I wish he was
Snowball.
Here. Snowball does not wish he was here.
A lot of FOMO in Snowball's life.
Temperature is very not Snowball. He's melting.
Yeah,
that ball of snow.
He is.
What was I gonna say? We come on these. I can't remember what I was gonna say. And I was gonna say, what did you just say? You were like,
to have get good away. Food. Get away. Oh, I was going to say your job. So everyone knows you, obviously, as a photographer mostly.
Right.
You're kind of Clark Kent Superman.
Sure.
Am I right?
No.
You kind of are. No, because you're Superman. People know you as Superman. They're like, that's Hafe Life. He makes the burning cart.
Yeah.
I fucking support. I love. You got a lot of fans out there. Max Arden. Gucci.
Gucci.
Fucking.
Max.
Yeah, we got people out here who love your photography.
Yeah.
We got people out here who love your perspective. But do they know the other half of your life?
Probably not.
Do you want to tell them right now?
Sure.
What do you do, Clark Kent? 9 to 5. You have a different life.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I try and balance it all, just because I have a family, so I've got to support the family. And when I think we talked about it on the last podcast. Go back episode 22.
Is it really?
I have no idea.
Each episode for me is a blackout.
It's just. Boof.
I could have. Do you want to know my social security number?
Sure.
Go ahead.
What is your debit PIN?
3276.
So
that was it, actually. So
I have to support the family, and so when I got out of photography, because there was no real industry that could sustain a family and, you know, provide for them and all that stuff, I got into procurement. So I work in supply chain, and I work for a really good company, and, you know, I do that kind of stuff, and it affords me the opportunity to provide for my family, but it doesn't provide that creative outlet that, you know, ever since I was a kid, and I just wanted to be a painter, and then I wanted to be a photographer, and oh yeah, like,
I didn't know you liked painting.
Ever since I was a kid, like, all I ever wanted to do was anything artistic, and I just, you know, because I couldn't sit still, I had really bad ADD, and, you know, I had to express myself, and I had no way of figuring out how to do it. And
when was the last time you made a painting?
I made two for June.
Aww.
For her nursery.
Post them.
So maybe I'll throw that out.
Are they bad?
I did. No, they're pretty cool.
You posted one?
I don't. See, that's the thing. Like, I realized I can't draw anymore. Like, I used to be able to draw and freehand and do kind of whatever I want, but now it's all more kind of abstract.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's real no rhyme or reason to it. But it kind of looks cool. And
right.
So I go with it. And half of art's just bullshit anyway. So
it is.
I feel like I can just sell it.
So much of art is
I'm not like your dad. Like, your dad's got an actual style.
Yo, request my dad on Instagram, deeplevel33. It's not a joke. His fucking paintings are insane. Deep Level is like a scientific method he created.
Hey, Jesus Christ. Your dad's on another level.
It's a thing.
Deep Level 33.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go.
Have you requested him yet?
No, I'm going to go do that right after we get out of the car.
I got to send him a quick heads up, because he definitely won't approve
your
request.
He's just going to be like,
He only approves requests from people like Ashley, like from people with like 27,000 followers.
I'm not.
No, he actually came to my birthday dinner. He met her in person at my birthday.
He's got to get the feeling.
Yeah, he needs to do a quick
interview.
He wants to make sure that you're not a bot.
He doesn't want the bots.
He doesn't need any bot follows.
So good.
Dad.
Deep Level 33.
Yeah. Anyway, so I didn't realize that you were into that. And so now, you know, I love that you have this job. I don't know. You probably don't. But I don't know. I just, like, to me, it's like, I don't know. I just identify with it. Like, I feel like I've had, because I don't know. A lot of people say to me, like, oh, how can I have your job? And it's like, well, it's not like literally all fun and games.
No, it's a lot of work.
There's an aspect to it that really is hard work.
Yeah.
But I'm fueled through those annoying parts.
Yeah.
For the end goal of the peak.
Right.
Like a hike. You know, hiking isn't fun. No one likes hiking.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think maybe a lot of people think that what you do and what I do kind of is, it's just, oh, cool, we're going on a golf trip. What they don't understand is I'm on 2 hours sleep, and I'll go out. We'll go play golf. I'll go shoot at sunset. I'll throw down food, and I'll go shoot more.
Right.
I'll get up early. I'll go shoot. We'll go play golf. I'll shoot during that. So it's a lot of work, and at the end of it, I'm totally spent, and then I got to edit everything, and
right,
you know what I mean. And so, but it's really, for me, it's really fun to do, because that's what I love doing, and it's kind of my outlet. So it's, you know, whenever it kind of adds and you're like, all right, I'm really tired, I'm really worn out, I don't really want to keep doing this, like, right. I just kind of want to go home, I want to be with my family and I just want to hang out, you realize like how, one, fortunate I am to have the opportunity to go play golf at where we're going to play golf with the people we're playing with and see the things that I can see and be able to, like, you know, make some photos that maybe a couple people will like.
People love golf photos, dude. I do.
They do.
I fucking love photos of golf courses.
They do. It's true. People love their photos of golf courses.
Did I just minimize what you do?
No. I think a lot of
your pictures
people
are way, they're moodiest, I would say.
Yeah.
You're kind of emo.
I'm very good Charlotte.
Yeah.
Is that an emo man? I'm Benji.
So good Charlotte, dude.
No, I think for
you're
me
the Smiths.
It's it goes back to kind
Van,
of
your golf shoes are Vans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hashtag ad.
Hashtag ad, sponsor me.
Hashtag Vans, give me a call, 917.
Yeah. 970.
ATM pin code.
You just direct deposit. I think what I looked at was a lot of golf photography is kind of the same. It's repetitive and it's right. it really wasn't interesting to me. And so based on how I learned to shoot photography and the photography that I was shooting, I started bringing that more and more into my style, and I started building my own editing style, which is a huge part of photography. I don't think a lot of people give editing a lot of credence to the whole process.
The quote, digital darkroom?
Like, there's a really famous photograph of Ansel Adams sitting between two prints of the moon over New Mexico.
Yeah, the cemetery.
And it's one of his
Hernandez.
Most famous... Yeah,
Hernandez.
It's one of his most famous photographs, and the original photo, unedited, to the edited photo, completely different.
Right.
And he was kind of one of the first photographers, especially landscape photographers, that would spend more time in a dark room than out shooting. So he would get his images, he would plan them out, he would shoot them, and then he would spend years developing them, getting them right. And
he would
learning.
Go back and pick old negatives and do them better.
And he said his biggest regret was not spending more time editing. There was so much stuff that he left unedited that he never went out and made prints off of. And for him, it was all film, so every print could be different.
Right.
And when he would actually, if you have like a real Ansel Adams print, it's going to be a little bit different than the next one.
One of a kind.
Because he was hand burning and dodging everything. And now you can just apply the same thing in Lightroom and, you know, you can replicate it through and through and through, but...
Have we ever talked about Ansel Adams?
I don't think so.
Bro, I was like, he was my hero for a long time. I read all of his books.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with his work way before I was into golf. And in some ways, I think that's one of the things I get out of golf is in the moment, I get that Ansel Adams experience of, wow, like I'm so cheap, I'm playing Twilight Golf. Wow, the sun is setting. It's unbelievable. The fog is coming up. There's fireflies. Whatever it is, you really get moments of natural beauty.
Well, the coolest thing about Ansel to me was how much value he put on his surroundings, his landscapes, you know, the amount of work he went in to conserve land and
right.
to keep it
undeveloped. Oh, you mean like the John Muir Trail and things like that?
Yeah, like developing these kinds of things and sustaining them, and you know, all of the work that, all of the eyes that he brought on landscapes and how important it is to protect, you know, national parks and establish those are huge. And golf gets a little bit of a bad rap in that it's bad for the environment and all those kinds of things, but that's not necessarily true. I'm sure there are courses that are just throwing pesticides down like it's water and don't give a shit.
Making it rain, quote unquote.
Some bad stuff. But there's also courses that are doing it in a very different way. And it's really cool to go out on those courses. And when we were in Ireland, it's a really good example. You're in a course that they just found. They found the holes. They moved minimal earth, if anything. And to be able to sit there and just see that, the lights going down, shadows are getting long, and see things like that, and you're like this is my landscape photography, you know? Right. What I mean, I'm not gonna probably go hike a mountain and do that every day,
yeah,
just because that doesn't ring as true for me. It's really cool to see a golf course kind of come to light with no light.
Whoa,
deep,
bro.
Deep.
What do you think?
We're 9 miles out. By
do you
way.
Ever? Do you ever think? Do you ever wish you like were using Ansel Adams style film equipment, large format?
I want to get into it. I do like 4x5, not quite 8x10, but there's a really good company that's making new 4x5 cameras. And so if people don't understand, like, when you talk about sensors, most sensors are like a crop of an old 35 millimeter film.
Right.
Full frame is equivalent to that. And then medium format is exponentially bigger than that. 4x5 is literally, the negative is 4.5, 4 inches by 5 inches.
It's the old camera with like the bellows.
The bellows. And, yeah. And the reason for the bellows is so that you can adjust the focal plane so everything's in perfect symmetry and you're not distorting lines, and or you are if you're trying to do that, but it's a really interesting tool, and there's no shutter. The shutter's on the lens.
Right.
So you attach your different lens to the front and everything happens on that mechanism, and you just expose to your film. It's really more of a sheet of paper now that you're exposed to, but you expose to that and then you go and develop it. And I learned on film, and I'm starting to get, I did it for a while when I did street photography, and I'm starting to do it more now, is I'm doing a whole thing where I'm just shooting black and white, developing my own black and white, scanning it.
And you develop just, it in the house, huh?
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, just develop it in a basement.
Yeah?
No toxins.
Little fumes? No? No toxins? You don't get fumes?
There's a few different formulas that you can use where you don't have to deal with all the bad stuff.
But I miss those smells.
That's probably why I skipped class a lot to go in a dark room.
I love it.
Those were the days when I was definitely drinking.
Yeah. The dark room wasn't just a place.
Huh? But I think that's a really cool thing that I want to start doing more and more of, just to kind of satisfy that creative thing.
Right.
But photography is such a process. Like, yeah. Painting is a process. And I don't think a lot of people understand the process of photography, and especially film photography. You know, you've got to know what film you're shooting, how that film reacts to how you're developing it, how you print it, or even how you ingest it in the Lightroom and then develop it.
Right.
There's a lot of work that goes into all of that. And that to me is a huge reason why I love photography, is it's a process, and I can go through it and I can over time tweak my process to change it or improve it a little bit by a little bit, even on a digital platform. So
for a second I thought you were talking about golf.
No, I do not improve my golf game at all. Never taken a lesson.
No shit, really?
No. I've just figured it out.
I would believe that on half your holes.
You've seen my swing.
Yeah, it's remarkable now that I know you haven't taken a lesson.
Never taken a lesson.
That's great.
Spend minimal time practicing.
Right.
When it shows.
Yeah.
I also have a newborn, so.
Hey, you get a hall pass and all that stuff. How is the, I'm sure a lot of your, people listening to this are thinking about the photo comps. And that was really successful.
Yeah,
you've done a couple now.
Fun. Yeah. I took a break just with a baby. But
I noticed I didn't win any of them.
Well, you're kind of a pro, and you actually have a background in photography, so.
Not fair?
I can't. It's not kosher to give it to, like, and it's been cool to see, like, there's a lot of really good photographers out there. Like, Ollie will throw stuff in.
Akbar's brother.
No. Ollie from.
Muhammad?
Yeah. No.
Cassius Clay.
TaylorMade.
Oh, Ollie. OLLIE.
Yeah.
He'll throw stuff in.
He's a great. Great photographer.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
But you don't choose anyway.
Well, what I'll do is I'll make it a vote, and then I pick based on the final two.
And you feel bad picking him?
Well, no. The purpose of the whole contest is to get people to kind of look at golf a little bit differently, or maybe learn something about photography and apply it to how they see things. So the first one was, black and white, which was a big hit. And I think the next one we'll do is a black and white one. And then it was, trying to show people you golf with in a different light. And some of the images we got were unreal. Like, they were awesome. And some people were taking their camera out. Some people were just using their cell phone. And it's really cool to see people thinking a little bit more creatively about their golf photos. It's not, they're what they were typically doing, and it's not what they typically see on Instagram. I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, maybe mimic some photographer styles, but some people are really just coming up with some unique ways of looking at it, which is really cool to see, because they don't necessarily know what they're doing. They're just they're just trying to look at things a different perspective, and that's really all photography is you're just trying, you're trying to look at things and show things in a different way.
Right.
And, you know, expose it right.
I love it. People must have responded really well to it, I think.
Yeah, I think the first one blew up, and then it just kept going from there. And, you know, it was really cool to have a lot of, every month, a different, you know, like Seamus sponsored one, Callaway sponsored one. And so we had a lot of people get involved and give away some products just for fun of it. And
like newborn products, like diapers?
Yeah, if anybody wants some used newborn onesies, that's going to be next month's giveaway.
I'm going to take a photo of you right now.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, this is where the photo came from.
That's fine.
Do I need a photo contest? You should do a photo contest of people holding microphones in their face while driving through rural Colorado.
I think you won that one. I think you won that one. But we'll do another one. I took a break just with the baby and stuff because it is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. I mean
hundreds and hundreds of entries. And
are you on Twitter? I don't know. I think I'm on Twitter, but I don't really use it.
I don't really use it.
No.
That's not my plan. There's too much.
It's too much.
It's an onslaught. I don't have the time for it. And I can't keep up.
Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram's good because I can, every other day I can put a photo out.
I got someone messaged me on Facebook. They messaged me one day, long question.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read it because I don't really go on Facebook. Then by the time I read it, a week or two had gone by, and then in the time since they wrote the first message and the time I read it, they had written six messages. And the effective content of the following messages was, "Good talk. Thanks for your reply." And I was like, "Oh, you know." But usually Instagram, I try to get back to everybody in like a couple days, but sometimes it's a week or two.
Yeah, so it depends on what happens. Like if some photos I put up or something in my story, and I'll just kind of get hit with a lot.
Yeah, like what? Like what's the common?
Well,
you want to do a little FAQ?
Sure.
What's the common question you got? What camera do you use?
Yeah, what camera do I use is
you
just
put that in your bio.
A lot of the question I get, how do I get that look?
Yeah. You should sell some presets.
I was thinking of doing that, but I don't really know how many people use Lightroom.
A lot of people will, dude. Like, to actually
feedback, hit the link below. Is there like a button I can hit the link below?
Bro, I can teach you how to swipe up. Link in bio.
Link in bio.
Swipe up. Yo. All right, I was going to go into something else. But, you know, I follow Do You Travel?
Okay.
Makes me feel a little guilty because it's this hot couple. They're probably pretty dumb, and they just travel the world, and they're both really hot. I mean, the girl is smoking.
Sure.
She's very good looking. And basically, I think he just takes photos of her, and then he puts the camera on a tripod and takes a picture of the both of them.
Of both of them.
And they're both looking off of a cliff.
Every photo.
Every photo. Okay. So anyway.
They have their style.
So anyway, we're in a town, Schweinmann's.
Schweinmann's.
We're in, this might be Holyoke, right outside of
Holyoke Fitness Club.
Oh, wow, that place looks popping. Pretty sure Holyoke has only got about maybe 700 people living here. Home to what we're about to experience as a very remote and potentially magical experience. Anyway, there's a place called the Mower Man, Lawnmower Repair.
Okay.
I think out here you just let it grow. I think if you live out here, you just let the lawn grow.
Yeah.
Maybe they're fixing lawnmowers from Ballyneal. That'd be surprising. Side topic averted. Let's go back to the other topic, which was FAQ.
Sure.
What do you get? You get so a lot of I actually think you should sell the presets.
Okay.
You don't need to sell them for a lot.
No.
Hafer's presets, $500.
$500 for half of it.
$500 down payment. $500 gets you on the way.
And then I need your debit card and PIN number for the other half.
What's your Venmo?
What's your Venmo? I'll just send myself money.
Yeah.
Hafer's
looking at selling prints. So if you guys want prints of Hafer's beautiful photographs, he'll sell them to you. I would love to see that happen.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Venmo him. What's your Venmo?
I don't know.
You got to have a Venmo.
I do. I think it's just Christian Hafer.
Just Venmo Christian Hay for some cash and he'll send you a print. Just tell him I sent you.
Yeah, a lot of cash though.
Yeah, not like lunch money shit. We're talking like Ivy League tuition.
Yeah. I want you to invest in your kids' college through my print.
By putting a golf photo on your wall.
Yep.
Because as if golf wasn't superfluous enough to life.
Exactly.
But is it?
Where are we going?
Well, now we're in a cornfield.
Okay.
We're back in a cornfield.
Yep.
Any more FAQs before we wrap this bitch up?
Nah. It's usually what camera, how do I take photos and walk?
I know the answers to all these.
What's the thing behind the sheep? What's the thing behind burning cart? Do you really never ride?
What is the thing behind the sheep?
The sheep is, it's a rip on the Minor Threat, the band Minor Threat.
Okay.
Who coined the term straight edge.
Yeah.
So no drinking, drugs, any of that. And so it's a rip on that with the golf club from the Yale Bulldog. And it's just kind of like a quick representation of how I kind of view myself, I guess.
Right.
A little bit of a black sheep when you look at golf. Uh-huh. I don't really necessarily think I fit too much of the mold. And it's just kind of cool.
Wow, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, it's not just the black sheep.
I might get that as a tattoo now.
Yeah, you should.
Right on my middle nipple. I bet you didn't know that.
Okay.
All right. Too well, that's been great, everybody. Thanks for listening, Christian. Thanks for joining us.
It's been real.
On Podcast from the Road. I wish the song will come in right now and it'll fade us out. We can just jibber jabber like, you know, in the Tonight Show when the music
we just
goes
talk
out.
About nothing.
Yeah, we're fading out right now. No one's even listening.
No one's even listening.
Thanks for listening. Christian's Venmo again. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And now I've got two mics. Whoa. Christian gave me his mic. Whoa, that is surround sound. I am hot. We need to turn the AC back on. Everybody, enjoy your next golf trip, whenever and wherever that may be. And, you know, hit it straight or don't.